create that rainy day fund. Meanwhile, during the same 2 weeks, they then submit a resolution proposing a rainy day fund. So my point is, similar to Commissioner Leonard's, is during the approved budget process, it is the council that is coming up with an approved budget, distinct and different from the mayor's proposed budget.
To be fair, Commissioner Adams, these really aren't issues we're directing at either of these two gentlemen.
You're absolutely right.
They are outstanding, and I've said this many times, outstanding members of the city staff. This is not in any way, I mean, I totally get your point, Ken. So these are not issues we're directing.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I think, you know, now we have something, at least in my proposed substitute, mm-hmm. that does both. It will get us moving on creating a rainy day fund. I mean, it establishes the rainy day fund account. It gives us the possibility of putting money in from 07-08 budget into that rainy fund account, and then it states whatever remainder we need to get to the $5 million level will be the first priority on the fall budget monitoring process. So
And I support that, and I think that's a great move, and I appreciate that. But my question is a little different, and I'm asking Mayor Potter if he would agree to for us to go back to our historical relationship with OMF and allow each of us to work with the staff there that we depend on confidentially.
Yeah, maybe I misinterpreted, Ken, but I thought that you said that, and I assume it's for the previous mayor as well, that you reported to the mayor and that your relationship with the mayor was as a bureau director to a commissioner, and that in that capacity that you felt an obligation to keep the commissioner in charge of your area apprised of what was going on in the area. So what I heard from Commissioner Leonard is that this is a new process. Has this happened before my arrival?
Well, Mayor, I've been at the city now for 15 years, and so I've worked under two different mayors. I don't believe that we are acting differently than we have acted in the past. We've always had a fine balance to walk between the requests of individual council offices and their hope that things would stay confidential, with our responsibility reporting to the mayor to keep the mayor's office informed as well. We try to be very straightforward with that and not make it a surprise. I don't believe that we are acting differently. That's been my experience.
Can you give an example of a time before even this budget year or a commissioner's request to you was not pursued out of a directive from the mayor's office?
During the approved budget portion of the budget process? Again, I think it's really important.
I want to have this question answered. Can you think of a time when a mayor, this one included, before this incident said, do not pursue that request from that commissioner? I'm directing you not to do that.
I'm pausing because I'm trying to think about that, and I haven't always been in my tenure in the budget position. So,
in your tenure currently, have you ever had that happen before?
This has been the first time, but also I know when we had this request, because we were concerned about our ability to respond to that and our ability to receive direction from the mayor as well, that the question was raised with the city attorney's office about our ability to respond, and I'm not certain that we've got clarity that we can do that or that's appropriate for us to do in the budget process that we are in. So there's an ambiguity that does concern me about our ability to respond.
Well, and to be clear, from my own experience was, you know, I frankly, Mayor Potter, will tell you, I have no problem with you and your office finding out what I'm working on. What I do have a problem is when I think that it's at least confidential amongst us, then having Anna Griffin from the Oregonian come up and say, well, Commissioner Leonard, Mayor Potter's office says that you're going to put the city more in debt with your proposal, a proposal I've only shared with OMF.
Are you talking they about clearly something went, that occurred this year?
It occurred this week.
On what?
Well, I can repeat what I just said if you'd like. I mean, what I said was Anna Griffin from the Oregonian said that your office criticized my budget alternative as compromising the city's finances, an alternative I have only been working on with OMF. And so that's therein lies my problem. So what I'm just asking is, as a matter of courtesy, and that's all I'm asking, as a matter of courtesy, I respect the fact that Ken reports to you and OMF reports to you, but I hope you respect the fact that we, the council, are independently elected and rely on that excellent staff to provide us with unbiased, unfettered information. And my experience here on the council, and this is my sixth budget here, this is the first time I've run into political obstacles in developing confidential information, and in Commissioner Adams' case, is actually being stopped from pursuing something that he wanted. And I'm just asking you to please respect our ability to ask staff for information for that information to remain confidential.
Tell you what, maybe to get to a solution on this, I'd be glad to have a discussion with you and the city attorney over that to figure out, because obviously Ken Russ is concerned about the ambiguity as well, to raise something that.
So you want to retain your right to deny my ability to get information?
That's not what I said, Commissioner.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Something that would meet the needs of the entire council.
I'll tell you what would meet the needs is do what every other mayor has ever done in the history of the city, and that's respect the ability of me and my colleagues to get information unfettered from your office. That's all you need to agree
to. Well, that's
to.
Not what Ken Russ said, but I'm glad to sit down with the city attorney and you and discuss it.
So getting back to the amendment, the nature of the substitute to establish the rainy day fund.
It requires a second.
That was my first point. I don't think anybody's seconded it.
What is it?
Second. Yeah, we need a second.
Second.
A second. And then I would ask that you come back with a more precise timeline for us to consider next week as to the decision points about this year's resources starting to seed that rainy day fund account we're creating today. Come back next week with the timeline of decision
points. And my concern is, Commissioner Saltzman, that if we come back with a timeline next week, that is presents a timing problem because the council is scheduled to approve the budget next week. Commissioner Adams suggested or recommended or asked or directed or whatever the right term is.
I'm not sure anymore what I can do exactly in talking to you.
We asked the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission for an extension of our deadline for submitting the budget. We have already done that and gotten an extension from the 15th of May, which is the statutorily required deadline, to the 19th to give us a few days after the council approves the budget to get it into shape. I can ask them, and I'm perfectly willing to ask them.
I wasn't suggesting necessarily that that you come back with a schedule that says ask the TSCC to delay once again, but I am saying, okay, let's assume TSCC still acts on whatever date. But then you did mention by the time we adopt the budget in June after the TSCC has had its hearings,
and
that would be a potential
the
decision.
Issue
that
there,
would be a potential decision point.
The issue there is consistency with the timeline that we have established and the point that Commissioner Adams raised, which was wanting to have $5 million either in additional revenues or expenditure reductions identified in time to include it in the approved budget, which is next week, unless we get an extension and the council wants to take more time. And I don't know if we would get an extension, but.
So what's the, just remind me if you wouldn't mind. So the official moment that we are in the approved budget making process starts when?
About 10 o'clock, about 9:45 this morning when the mayor released his proposed budget.
So we're going to be given how many days to consider, discuss, and review this budget?
Seven
days. And just to again reiterate my frustration, I have not been able to pursue lines of questioning and inquiry that I wanted to pursue until I thought today, and then you're giving us 7 days. My individual request, and maybe I'm the only one up here, is that we see from TSCC how long we can get in terms of a delay.
Well, let me help you with that. We're independently elected folks. We aren't to be railroaded to vote for anything that we choose not to vote for. And if we choose not to vote next week because we want more time, we absolutely have the constitutional right to set aside this budget until we're ready. And I frankly am not ready. And I'm willing to take the time necessary to understand the process, to have the questions answered that I need answered, so we put together a responsible budget that prepares this city for economic downturn. I'm not going to be pushed into a corner because of a political timeline set up to cause me to feel some pressure to vote for something that's not in the best interest of Portlanders. And I don't need TSPP PC to tell me that.
Well, like I said, I'm simply asking, come back with some timelines. I'm not prepared to say we need to ask TSCC. I know we have statutory responsibilities to have a budget in place by July 1st.
June 30th, yeah.
June 30th, whatever.
And the council has to vote on it in June, and the law requires the TSCC have it for 20 days, and then they hold a hearing and they certify the budget before the council can act on adopting it. And so there are legal timelines.
But after that, in that time after TSCC holds its public hearings and we adopt it, we can amend it even then, correct?
You can amend the budget at the time you're adopting it, mm-hmm. As long as you don't increase expenditures by more than 10% mm-hmm. in any fund.
But if we didn't increase expenditures but changed how we were spending the money within
the... You can do that at the adopted budget phase.
In any fashion that we'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So in my
view, $5 million isn't going to touch that 10% threshold.
And you're not increasing expenditures.
You're not increasing spending. You're moving it around from different places is the important point. So in my view, our timeline is to, if June 25th is the current date that we have set to vote, that's the date by which we have to make mm-hmm. our final decisions. We can approve something tentatively that goes to TSCC and TSSC and then have until June 25th to make final decisions.
Mm-hmm. So I just so that I've done my job as transportation commissioner, because we have this new gap in the transportation revenues, I've asked for the next 2 weeks to 30 days that we go through all of our proposed projects, because we assumed back in October a lower inflator related to energy costs than we're actually seeing occur. So we need to complete that review. And then we've also got a $2 million gap in revenues on the operating budgets. So as much time, and maybe it's separate and distinct from the rest of the city budget, but as much time as we can have in transportation to try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again would be appreciated.
I just wanted to understand or clarify the legislative intent of this. Is the legislative intent to not cut any one-time or ongoing positions as a result of finding the $5 million?
I think it's to look at options, but mm-hmm. not to direct. This isn't directing that that occur. But it is saying, you know, let us look at that option.
And the timing for coming to that option would be, you want us to come back with that next week.
Timeline for that.
Or, I mean, bring you a timeline next week.
Yeah, timeline. Timeline, mm-hmm. right.
And we can do that and prescribe alternatives for what happens with the approved and the adopted budgets. I think the shorthand of how I interpret the direction that I think I'm getting or I'm going to get from council is that you want us to find a way to set aside $5 million in the 08-09 budget at whatever phase is agreed on finally. Either through a combination of increased revenues or reduced spending, that we're comfortable with saying, here is a way you can get to $5 million. And if we're going to be doing that and identifying individual reductions in bureau budgets, we'll need to be coming back with those individual distinct reductions. We can't, for example, just say Bureau X needs to reduce its personal services expenditures by whatever amount. We need to, the law requires us to eliminate positions or eliminate funding for individual positions. So it has to be that specific.
Yes, yeah. That's consistent. I think that captures my intent.
Further questions?
I want to provide an emphasis on give us a menu, mm-hmm. a salad bar, couple of choices on this budget salad bar, but the emphasis should be on cutting revenue or with it finding savings within existing revenue, not raising fees or taxes at this point in the recession, mm-hmm. given the strains on household incomes, and to book up front that which would normally fall to the beginning fund balance in the future, so that the security of not leaving, you know, it means that in the future we might have less beginning fund balance, but I'm fine with that because I'd like the security of a rainy day fund up front. Mm-hmm.
And what I'm understanding you to say, Commissioner Adams, if we set aside the expenditure side, if we don't have to go there, for example, if we were to be able to identify with confidence that the actual beginning balance for next year will be $5 million more than what we've got in the budget just because of the differences between the money that comes in and the money that goes out, that would be sufficient to meet the needs that I'm hearing the council express.
As an option, yes.
As an option.
In addition to looking at, right, you know, limiting out-of-town travel to only essential travel, looking at not necessarily looking at the option of not starting new projects based on outside consultant contracts, mm-hmm, really looking at anything that isn't considered absolutely basic and necessary to the operations of the city.
Okay. Would that also then involve the PSSRP contracts that might come about in order to complete the revitalization of our public safety?
I wouldn't read it that way, because what I heard Commissioner Adams say was non-essential contracts. I would consider this an essential contract.
Yeah, that would not be my intent. Yes.
Okay. Right. Good. Further? Go ahead and call the vote.
Adams?
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for bringing this forward. I think it's the right thing to do given our uncertain economic times. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Yes, I actually appreciate this, too, because I think it will help us find that money. This is the fourth budget season that I've requested a rainy day fund, so I'm glad that it's finally occurring. Aye.
Is that the motion to substitute?
That was the motion to substitute. You're correct. That was voting on the substitution. We need to vote on the.
Please call the vote on the.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 587.
Adopt and authorize submission of the Action Plan 2008-09 application to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for grants under the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnership, Emergency Shelter Grant, and Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS programs.
Second reading, call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. 588.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the Portland Fire and Rescue Station 1 Seismic Upgrade and Facility Remodel Project.
Second reading, call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to say I received a briefing between last week and this week from Portland Fire and Rescue staff and also Connie Johnson from OMF, and I'm comfortable with everything now. I guess the one request I want to make now, I'm not going to hold up the vote or anything, there were a list of 11 items that will be deducted if bids come in too high. I think one of the first items to go was energy-efficient windows. I guess my request would be maybe that be one of the last items to go if you have to, because that really is going to pay for itself over time. So if you could maybe take the energy-efficient windows and put that lower down the list of things that might get axed if the numbers come in too high. Otherwise, I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 589.
Adopt city comprehensive financial management policies.
Please come forward. This is a really important tool for the city in terms of helping us set up policies that present the first comprehensive update of the city's financial policies since they were adopted in 1992. The council adopted policies are important to provide guidance to decision makers and information to our community about how we are spending the city's dollars. We use this as an opportunity to update the policies to include reference to our funding commitments to the city's infrastructure. It makes it easier to find information in one place. These policies and procedures were reviewed by bureau directors, council staff, city finance managers, bargaining unit representatives, and citizens who serve on the OMF Advisory Committee. So with that, I'll turn it over to our financial planning manager, Casey Short.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As the mayor said, it's been 16 years since the council has adopted a set of comprehensive financial management policies. We've been acting under the old ones all that time. It's more than time to update them. Excuse me. OMF has spent a lot of time working on this update, and as the mayor referred to, we have consulted with bureaus and your offices and others to review the draft policies that we came up with. I'd like to just briefly give you some highlights of what some of the changes are. Many of these things are housekeeping or just acknowledging that we do business differently than we did 16 years ago and incorporating current practice into the policies. One of the first things that these policies do is require that they be reviewed and updated every 2 years. So we don't get into this again. It further assigns responsibility for management of each of the sections of the policies to a specific person or entity in the city. So there's somebody responsible for making sure these things are current. As far as programmatic or substantive changes to the policies themselves, the first one I want to highlight is one that we were just talking about a few minutes ago, which is that this new policy provides that 25% of any unanticipated beginning fund balance will be reserved for capital, for maintenance in the general fund in the fall bump, and the remainder will be set aside for use in the following year's budget process as a resource. This is different. This is something new that we haven't done before. It also revises the policy on general fund revenues generated by a bureau, parks fees, fire inspection fees, on down the list, and changes the way those are managed that give the bureaus both more responsibility and more flexibility in managing those funds. Clarifies direction on the use of one-time funds, says more clearly what those funds can and should not or cannot be used for. Clarifies the policies on general fund reserves, and rather than suggesting that if the reserves have to be tapped, we start restoring them within 24 months. This requires that the reserves start being restored within 24 months. Strengthens the ability to plan for operating and maintenance costs by requiring bureaus to identify future maintenance needs. It establishes requirements for city-issued grants, which are something that we have done a lot more of than we did 16 years ago without guidance from formal city policies, so this is a good thing. And adds new things to get more into the electronic age. It establishes new policies for electronic payment processing, treasury holding accounts, to keep the city in line with best practices, and it also updates the debt management policy. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. These would go into effect on the 1st of July. And this is a non-emergency ordinance, so it wouldn't be voted on until next week.
Casey, besides the beginning fund, I'd like you to go through that again a little more slowly.
All right.
Are there any other substantive changes?
That is probably the most substantive, and I'll get back to that in a second. I think the next one is how we treat bureau-generated revenues in the general fund. In the past, the policy has been that if a bureau exceeded its revenue projections, that they kept half and the general fund got half. If they fell short, the general fund would pick up half of the shortfall. What this new policy is proposing is that if the bureau generates more than they budgeted for, they keep it. If they get less, they have to cut their budget to stay within their discretionary general fund allocation. If they need more money from discretionary general fund, however much more they need to balance their budget to stay within their authority that year, gets reduced from their CAL appropriation in the following year and the following year only. I think that and what we're suggesting we do with the fund balance are the two most substantive pieces of change in these policies. The fund balance piece is essentially what was written in the original draft of the rainy day resolution, which is that we codify, if you will, the direction that the council began with this year's fall bump to say that 25% of excess beginning balance at the end of the year that you deal with in the fall bump typically, 25% of any of that money would go for capital maintenance or repair. And the remainder would not be available for the council's use to spend in the fall bump. It would be set aside as a resource for the following fiscal year. So essentially doing what the original draft of the rainy day resolution said it would do. If you get $5 million or $8 million or $12 million more to start the year than you thought, a quarter of that would go to capital, and the rest of it would be set aside as a resource, a one-time resource in the following year's budget process.
So on the, if the Bureau raises it, it gets to keep it, can, we don't have, this isn't the right setting, but could you have the appropriate person on your staff get back to me and my folks and the PDOT staff about how this change in policy would impact the safety fund money, the red light cameras, revenues in the PDOT?
I don't believe that would affect PDOT because we're just talking about general fund, and that's in the transportation fund.
Got it. So the policies that guide PDOT in this area fall under where, PDOT?
A lot of the policies are focused on the general fund and how we manage the general fund. There are references to those sorts of things, but there is nothing in here or in the prior policies that limit the flexibility of a non-general fund agency to deal with its revenues, positive or negative, as they see fit, with, of course, commissioner in charge and council approval. And we take a look at it, but it's not stipulated in here.
Thanks.
Other questions?
Good work.
Thank you, Casey. Did anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Before we move on to item 590, OMF has requested we hear items 590, 93, and 94 together. Are there any objections to hearing those items together? Hearing no objections, Carla, could you please read item 594, 593, and 590 in that order?
594, authorize contract with SAP Public Services, Inc. to provide implementation consultant services for the Enterprise Business Solution Project. 593, amend contract with Pacific Consulting Group, Inc. to provide quality assurance services for the Enterprise Business Solution Project. 590, authorize revenue bonds for Enterprise Business System Project.
Ken?
Good morning, Mayor Potter and members of the City Council. For the record, I am Ken Rust. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Finance. Joining me today are Jennifer Sims, the CFO for the city and project sponsor for the Enterprise Business Solution Project, along with Sue Keel, PDOT Director and member of the EBS Executive Steering Committee. There are several actions in front of you today relating to the city's Enterprise Business Solution Project, or EBS. As you know, this project is designed to replace the city's aging IBIS financial system with a modern, integrated financial and human resource management system, something the city has never had. We began this effort in 2003 with an assessment of the city's needs and requirements, along with the review of the technology tools that could meet the city's current and future business needs. Recommendations were brought forward to Council in July 2004, and Council directed OMF to proceed with the project at that time. Since that time, we have completed the first phase of the project, which included defining our citywide business needs and selecting a software application that could meet those needs. This resulted in the selection of the SAP software application. Following phase one, we undertook a competitive selection process, including extensive reference checking and site visits, to retain a qualified consulting firm to assist the city in work associated with configuring, testing, and implementing the SAP software. This work effort has also included developing interfaces with other city software applications that will not be replaced by SAP, but will need to exchange information with the SAP system. Examples of these types of systems include the Maximo work order system used by PDOT, Synergen project management applications used by Water and BES, the Kayenta utility billing system, and others. The phase two implementation schedule was built around an underlying assumption that both the finance and HR payroll modules would go live simultaneously. Our most recent schedule anticipated a go live date of January 24th of this year. Late last year in 2007, it became apparent that we would not be ready to go live under this schedule for several reasons. First, necessary development and system interface work had not yet been completed. Adequate system testing had yet to be performed, and we were experiencing higher error rates in initial tests of the payroll system. Based on this information, I directed the project team to begin work on determining a reset schedule, identifying the extent of work needed to address the issues described above, and analyzing alternative strategies that would enable the city to achieve a successful implementation. To assist in this analysis, we brought in SAP Public Services to provide an assessment of the status of our implementation and to get their views on alternative implementation strategies. This effort began in earnest in January, and I have been briefing your offices on our progress since that time. During this process of establishing a reset schedule, it became apparent that the problems we were dealing with were much more serious and complex than originally thought. Key issues included the time evaluation and payroll strategy was flawed and would need additional significant work. More time and effort would be needed to complete the development and system testing work. The combined go-live strategy was a high-risk and high-cost approach and needed to be reconsidered. And lastly, project management and leadership was seriously lacking and in need of major change. Based on these results, I have worked with our city project team, our quality assurance consultant, and city bureaus to develop a strategy that will enable the city to move forward with this project in a successful manner. This strategy includes replacing the current implementation consultant, Ariston, with SAP Public Services. This recommendation is being made because we believe SAP has more experience and a much deeper bench to draw on. As developer of the software, they are the most knowledgeable about how to best implement their software, and we believe they have the ability to bring the right resources to bear on this project. Second, review and confirm the work that has been done to date. We've had an initial assessment performed by SAP which indicates that most all of the work effort to date can be used in the final implementation of the software. We are also looking at splitting the implementation of the finance and HR payroll modules into two phases. The current schedule that we are working under the revised schedule calls for finance module to go live on November 1 of 2008 and the HR payroll module to go live on April 1st of 2009. We also want to focus on risk management and simplification, deferring some functionality to a future date in order to make sure that we don't compromise our revised schedule. While we have accomplished a lot on the EBS project, more work is needed, and unfortunately this comes at additional expense. We estimate that the additional 14 months that will be needed to fully implement both modules will cost an additional $18.45 million, increasing the current project budget from $31 million to about $49.5 million. Although we have identified some additional resources that will help offset these costs, we expect that we will need to finance about $10.3 million of cost, and this will have an impact on bureaus beginning in fiscal year 2009-2010. I know that this is frustrating and disappointing news to you, and I feel exactly the same way. However, I do know that we must continue the effort to replace the city's aging financial system. It is 18 years old, it is outdated, and in danger of being unsupported by the current vendor. Of equal or greater risk is the fact that the city staff supporting this application will soon be retiring, and we have no ability to back up the skill set they possess to run that system. I also want to assure you that this is not a software problem. In fact, the SAP software is successfully run by over 42,000 corporations, public and private, in 120 countries around the world. Nike and Intel are two local private sector examples. Multnomah County, Tacoma, Washington, the state of Washington represent some of the governments that successfully run SAP to meet their business needs. It is also important to note that until we are ready to implement the SAP system, we will continue using the city's existing business information tools to pay employees, process accounts receivable, and pay vendors doing business with the city. We will not turn the new system on until we are confident that it will produce accurate and timely results. Finally, I would like to acknowledge the support and dedication that city bureaus and staff are providing to this project. This has been hard work, work that has gone on longer than expected and will continue for some time, but work that we all acknowledge needs to be done. Their support for this project is what will make it a success. With that, I would like to turn now to Sue and ask that she talk about the project from a Bureau Director's perspective, and I will then have Jennifer walk through the first of the EBS items that are in front of you this morning.
Thanks, Ken. Susan Keel, Director of Transportation. As Ken said, I'm a member of the Executive Steering Committee, and that committee is comprised of Bureau Directors in combination with Ken and Jennifer. Members of that committee recognize the significance of EBS to the conduct of the city's business. We have been reviewing information as it developed throughout this entire process and discussing with Ken and Jennifer and project staff. We've been clear that the new systems would not be implemented until we were sure that they would perform well. I think some of the things that Ken said are very significant in that most of what has been done to date, the lion's share, is usable under this new contract. We've learned that the project was more complex than we originally envisioned and that the timeline was too short given the complexity of our city systems. The proper timeline for the required work, I think, is as Ken suggested. The split go-live strategy is a better one. And although Ken said that there's been great effort on the part of the bureaus to help implement this, it really puts additional pressure on the bureaus by going to this longer timeline and the split live strategy. I've been very pleased sitting with that committee of bureau directors and high-level staff to see the group rise to the level of looking at the city in total, acting more like you do on an everyday kind of basis, because people have set aside their bureau-specific kinds of concern and looked at what was in the best interest of taxpayers, ratepayers, and the overall city. I was proud to be part of that group. We have asked pointed questions when information came forward, challenged assumptions, and risen to that level of making the best choices for the city generally. The committee and I fully support the recommendations before you today.
Mayor Potter and members of the council, I'm Jennifer Sims, Director of the Bureau of Financial Services. We have three action items before you today related to the EBS project. The first item is an emergency contract for professional services to serve as the prime integrator, replacing Ariston with SAP Public Services and completing the implementation of SAP software. This is a fixed fee deliverables-based contract for an amount not to exceed $11.77 million. SAP will provide the leadership and support to go live with the SAP software in the two phases as described by Ken. SAP has the experience, knowledge, resources, and commitment needed to successfully complete this project. The second action item is to extend the contract of Pacific Consulting Group to match the new planned go-live date for the project. The amount added to this contract is $331,360 for a contract total of $1,095,000. PCG has served as the quality assurance advisors on the project since August of 2004, and we recommend they continue as their knowledge and advice is essential. We bring both of these items forward as emergency actions in that it is urgent to retain these key consultants on the project to minimize costs that would be incurred with a delay. The third action item is an ordinance authorizing the issuance of revenue bonds of up to $11.5 million to provide additional funds to complete the project. The ordinance delegates needed tasks to the debt manager. It is expected that initially a line of credit would be utilized and later refinanced with longer-term debt. A competitive process will be used to secure the line of credit. This is a quick summary of the three action items before you. Thank you.
Do we have representatives from Pacific Consulting here today?
We don't have the PCG folks out here today, Dan.
I guess one of the questions I have is at some point one of you told me in one of our briefings on this that the city has over 500 different payroll routines, in other words, different ways of calculating people's pay, which seems, you know, mind-boggling to say the least, but it seems like we're trying to adapt that our system or the new system to that 540 plus payroll schemes. Why can't we reduce the number of payroll schemes. It does seem like a way that maybe this payroll module could get done a lot quicker, to my simple mind.
Commissioner, actually, I think it's what we had briefed you on were the number of different work schedules that we have in the city's payroll system. And unfortunately, it's more than 800 different work schedules. Clearly, that makes configuring any system more difficult when you have so many different ways in which people's schedule can affect the hours worked and the paycheck that they receive. I think the difficulty at this point in time in changing that is that many of these are a result of union contracts that have been developed over a long period of time. And I think it points out to us that going forward, we need to do much more careful work about allowing changes in contracts that, while maybe useful for a small number of employees and helpful at a moment, can forever complicate the ability to maintain that in a system and to change or upgrade those systems over time. Clearly, there's a balance point between the need for flexibility and the needs of employees with the effort it takes to maintain and sustain that. I don't think in the past that there's been much of a balance. It's mostly been doing those things and been very accommodating. I think we need to take a much harder stance at that and look at that at the balance point to determine that we're not really creating a system that makes it extremely complicated and maybe not very easy to implement changes to it over time.
Oh, okay. Maybe we need to an embargo going forward on any additional payroll schemes. I don't use the word scheme in a negative manner. I'm just saying payroll algorithm, payroll routine, whatever you want to call it. Do you need us to declare that embargo?
I'm not sure if it's the. I'm not sure if that's the necessary action, but certainly there may be something like that. And having the council weigh in on that and giving us your support for that would be very helpful. Now, I recognize, we want to be careful that there are important business needs and work requirements of the city that we have to accommodate. But we need to have, really a focus on the balance point with the aim towards, when we have two ways of doing things, the easy way or the hard way, let's try to choose the easy way. Oftentimes what we've done is ended up choosing the hard way.
I would advise you that an embargo on bargaining with unions on work schedules would be akin to an embargo on pay raises. Maybe make people here feel good, but it has no legal authority. I mean, the state law gives unions the rights to bargain wages, hours, working conditions, and that is not the avenue by which I agree with Commissioner Saltzman we need to address it, but that's not the way to address it.
Well, I wasn't suggesting an embargo on bargaining, but I am suggesting that maybe the universe of bargaining alternatives out there can be accommodated within the 840 current payroll approaches we have.
We just can't. We don't have the authority to limit that. I mean, we can encourage that for good reasons, but we don't have the authority to limit that.
And if we could, the council could set up a commission to look at that, and come up, which would involve bureau personnel, union folks, to come up with some standards that would try to achieve that balance.
That would be a perfect topic for a labor management discussion. A perfect topic. I would call it that, and not a commission. Because that's exactly what we try to get them to do, is stuff exactly like that.
Well, yeah, I'd like to, can we have that addressed by, we do have a labor management city group, don't we?
Yeah, we have a citywide labor management committee, and many bureaus also have bureau labor management committees. I think it is an appropriate topic to talk about. Clearly, it's a bargaining issue, and I think what we need to be mindful of is, as we're bargaining those work schedules, from the management side, being aware that there's an additional requirement that we maintain those systems, and maybe we need to find more creative ways to work towards a solution that works for both parties.
There's another issue, I think, that complicates this whole area, and that's the 300 shadow computer systems that operate separate from the mainframe system. That's one area where we could put together a group of people to look to see how we could begin to eliminate some of the shadow systems in order to simplify this EBS process.
That's correct, Mayor. When we did, as part of the business requirements in some of the earlier phases of this project, went through a process of trying to document how many different computer systems, and some being very large, standalone business applications like Maximo, Kayenta, that are not going to be replaced by SAP, but they also include a lot of small individual databases and spreadsheets that sit and reside on people's computers that take information and exchange it with the IBIS system.
We documented over 300 of those, and a lot of those will simply not be connected to SAP when we go forward. So people will be needing to use the new system to produce the reporting information that they require. Now, the good news is that SAP, because it has information that will be available to you, an individual instantaneously, it won't be stale, it has a much more robust reporting ability, should be able to replace those without any loss of functionality to the bureaus. But we do have a lot of work to get ourselves on a path where we have fewer standalone systems. The idea being with one of the key objectives of this whole system is to have one source of truth. Data gets input into one system, is shared amongst a variety of applications, but it's not entered into several different systems, and we're never certain whether that's the right piece of information or not. The system has the power to be able to do that and to allow us to take advantage of that in ways that we've never had in the past. If we duplicate what we've had in the past, which is to allow a proliferation of shadow systems to sprout up again, we will really undermine our ability to wrest the value out of the system that we're creating.
Well, that's where a resolution from us would be, I think, thoughtful and on point, is to prohibit bureaus from having shadow systems. Absolutely, positively prohibit that.
Just so we're really clear, the current mainframe for the city hasn't really had the kind of functionality that would allow a lot of the work by the bureaus to be done any other way than a, quote, shadow system. So as moving forward, I think the integration is really important. I'm reading the Oregonian story today, the however many separate programs for basic business. It says 322 separate programs for basic business functions, and a 2003 study found. It'd be useful, I think, to us to know of the 322 separate programs, how many of those should go away with this new system, and how many are like Maximo that this system won't provide functionality for even once implemented. And I think that could be part of the resolution, at least as an exhibit or some guidance for the resolution, because I think we want to send the message to and help educate our bureau management and our workers. You will have opportunities to use this new system without having to continue your standalone system.
Could you folks prepare a resolution and distribute it to the council for input?
I believe we can, yes.
Do you think that's an appropriate approach?
Yeah, I don't have any particular issue with that. I think it's good for us to look at that list. And as Commissioner Adams mentioned, there are some large standalone systems we are not going to replace. SAP isn't the solution to everything. But there are a lot of those things that can be replaced, and it may be that we have a situation where over time more functionality will be brought into SAP. We may find that we do not need a standalone project management system, or there might be a new work order system inside of SAP and their ability to do that work that we want to move and migrate to. I think we want to look at increasingly use the functionality of SAP to do the city's business, because once that information's in that system, we know it'll be easier to maintain and cheaper to run it over time. You know, so we can do that.
From my perspective, in that executive steering committee, there is absolute commitment to do exactly what you're saying here, to cut down on those separate kinds of systems, to use SAP to only hold on to that which is absolutely required. Now, you know, it's the old question, when you get down to the details, you may have some resistance to do that. And so
this group that you're a member of, Sue, helped draft a proposal.
I'm sure we can.
That would be workable, that wasn't, didn't have the unintended consequence of
absolutely
problems, but thoughtfully directed that we have a single system and a single process.
It's essentially get on board. I mean, and we also
stay on board.
Yeah, and stay on board. And that business on the different time schedules was discussed at length. Clearly, it's not that there are all that number of time schedules that are required. Some of it's interpretation, and we're on board with cleaning that up as well. So
I think also if the group, sort of the converse of that is to have the group begin the discussion of, since we're on SAP, the standalone systems that are most compatible with SAP, have somebody start the sorting, identification and sorting process of that. So I wanted to just underscore it. I've been as you know, I've been concerned about the cost estimates of this from the first time it came before the city council. What exactly, well, I can't ask that because we'll get sued, but just reiterate for us and the public why you believe this is the last of the cost overruns. What have you done? What are you going to be, what's different moving forward than what we've, the path we've traveled thus far?
Well, first I'd like to say that we've done a lot of work on this project and we know a lot more about what it's going to take to get to the finish line. And as I think mentioned by Jennifer or Sue earlier, the vast majority of the work that's been completed will be used. It's not as if we're starting at ground zero. A lot has been done and a lot has been learned and a lot of work is going to be taken advantage of. I think the biggest thing, and when I've talked to your offices about this project, I've told you as we were trying to figure out what the next step was needed to be, that I'm not going to bring a schedule or a budget back to you until I have confidence in it. And the reason why I have confidence in what we're bringing forward today is that we spent a considerable amount of time understanding the nature of the issues that we're facing. We've done a lot of work. One of the big problem areas has been in configuring our payroll system and time evaluation. We've conducted over 1,500 tests of the way people are paid to determine just exactly what the problems are going to be in terms of configuring payroll. It's critically important that people be paid accurately and timely. So that information and the work that's been done on the other pieces of the project is all going to be very helpful and instructive moving forward. So the work that's been done informs us. Second is to get a qualified firm that I have confidence in that has the proper skill set and leadership to take us to success. I'm extremely disappointed in the performance of the vendor that we're moving away from. I do have high confidence in SAP Public Services. They understand the significance of this project. They understand the importance of the project to us and to themselves. And I believe they are going to be the kind of partner with the experience and the knowledge and having worked on tough implementations in the public sector with a realistic schedule and a knowledge of what we've done to this point and a deep understanding of their own software to take us to success. And those are the kinds of things that Commissioner Adams make me feel able to bring forward to you the budget and the schedule today that I think is what's going to, one, lead us to success and result in no additional surprises.
The other question I have is, so you've known about this problem since December, is that right?
That's when it became, you know, very apparent as we were ramping up, thinking that we were in a position to go live on January 24th. When we started seeing that the development work that was necessary for completion was lagging and the real significant issues showing up with payroll, it became apparent to me at that point that we had to make a decision that we were not going to go live, and that's what I did in December, yes.
And the original estimate of $20-some million was based on just back of the envelope. Was there an original estimate at $20-some million for this project?
The original estimate was one that was negotiated with the consultants for the state for the scope of work that they were they had agreed to deliver for us. It included our own project staff and time based on the time schedule for implementation. The statement of work, I think you should know, is it wasn't as if we didn't know what we wanted. We knew exactly what we wanted. Our statement of work is 184 pages long.
But the original estimate was what for the project?
The original estimate was $27.9 million. We had one amendment with Ariston that increased that to about $31 million.
There weren't any earlier internal estimates?
There was some early work done beginning back in, I think, 2003 that had consultant estimates only and not city staff costs and other project costs built into that estimate. So it really was not a fully loaded estimate, Commissioner Adams.
And then in terms of how we're going to pay, we're going to borrow $10.5 million to pay for some of the cost overruns. And is that $10 million include the debt service costs? Or is it just $10 million that for how many years we take out of bureau budgets? Or I'm sorry, go back through over how we're going to pay for
borrowing. The plan for paying for the increased costs is there are several sources of funds that will be used. One, we have some costs already that are being borne by bureaus for operating the system, expecting that it would have gone live by now or would go live during the course of this next year. Those funds aren't needed for supporting the operation, so we'll use those to pay for the project itself. We have a budget note from a year or so ago that committed all carryover funds or any excess balance in the OMF organization to be committed to the project, and we think that contributed about $500,000. We are also looking at some debt restructuring on our pension bonds that we believe will free up some resources that would otherwise be distributed to bureaus, and those savings that bureaus receive will help them offset costs associated with increased costs of this project. And the remainder of it then will be financed initially with a line of credit and then funded over an 8-year period of time, consistent with the term that we've used with the first phase of this project, through the issuance of general fund-backed bonds. And that debt service is approximately $1 million or so a year, beginning in 2009-10. And so that's what bureaus will be distributed, a portion of that cost beginning then, Commissioner Adams.
And it's an overhead charge to the bureaus?
Is it overhead or is it through an IA?
For general fund, for us, the estimate on it was $124,000 in that year.
So with the carryover and the pension bond savings and the line of credit, is that what adds up to the $10.5 million?
No, the $10.5 million, Commissioner, is the line of credit borrowing. The difference between the $18.5 and the $10.5 are these other sources of funds.
$18.5 and $10.5. Yeah. Okay. So what would we normally do with the pension bond savings? What would normally happen with that money?
In the absence of using it for this project, it would be distributed to bureaus on a pro rata basis, and it would be used to help offset other expenses those bureaus would be incurring.
So it would be discretionary resources to the bureaus?
Yes.
Sue, do you know what that is for PDOT?
No.
Okay. And the line of credit, so the cost of borrowing the $10.5 million, is that the cost that includes the interest costs?
No, it does not.
So with interest costs, how much is it?
I don't have that off the top of my head. But typically we don't show, and when we do capital projects, we don't show the interest costs because we're really indifferent between paying it in a lump sum today or borrowing it over time and paying interest, because the present value equivalency is exactly the same if you did the discounting of the cash flow. So from the point of view of the project, we have the financing decision is separate from the project cost decision, and we don't believe it's appropriate to treat it as a project cost because we're making the decision to finance. We could pay it in a lump sum and have the exact present value cost equivalency as a result.
Thanks.
Further questions? We'll go through each of the ones individually. Please read item 594.
No one signed up.
Oh,
okay. 594, authorize a contract with SAP Public Services, Inc. to provide implementation consultant services for the Enterprise Business Solution Project.
Let's call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, these are the kinds of issues that haunt those of us up here more than anything, but they happen. I mean, they happen. They're the real world. They happen in the private sector all the time. They don't get the notoriety they do when they happen to us, rightfully so. So for me, the issue is always not so much that these kinds of incidents occur, but how do we manage them? How do we react to them? And I have to tell you, Ken, I think your reaction has been perfect. I think you have handled this professionally. You have assumed responsibility where appropriate and assigned responsibility where appropriate. So I find your reactions to have been credible, to have served all of us well. And there's a cost overrun, but I don't have a lot of issues with how this has been managed at all, other than obviously just wishing it didn't happen, but it just happens. And so I really appreciate the work of you, your staff, how you approach this, and I have high confidence in your high confidence that this is going to get done. So thank you very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, in the interest of fairness, I will point out my strong concerns about this now becomes the largest sole source contract or no-bid contract in the city's history. Many of you will recall, several weeks ago, I was raising the same concern about the contract for the Sovie Island Bridge. as being a no-bid contract. This dwarfs that, and given ordinary circumstances, I certainly would not approve a no-bid contract of $11.5 million. But I do think these are not ordinary circumstances. I think the case, as Commissioner Leonard has said, has been handled by OMF, all of you well and responsibly, and I believe this is clearly, and it's also